drip.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Glad you're tuned in this morning as we continue with fallout and what finally seems to be some thawing in global credit markets. The evidence is in the LIBOR, aka London Interbank Offered Rate, one of the main rates when it comes to lending between banks. It fell by nearly 0.4% today, the biggest daily drop since January. Part of what's breaking up the freeze is another round of bailout announcements. Today, South Korea made the biggest bailout move yet by an Asian government. Marketplace's Scott Tong has more from Shanghai.
Korea's government put up $130 billion to support its troubled banking system. The message to the markets was, hey, we're good for it. And Korean stocks gained 2% today, and its currency picked up 1%. Here's the underlying problem. Before the credit crunch, Korean banks figured the best way to borrow was in U.S. dollars. Interest was low, and so was the value of the dollar.
The problem is all good plans tend to go awry at some point.
That's Bill Belshear of Macquarie Securities. When financial markets dried up, so did Korea Inc.'s credit line.
When you go into a global credit crunch or there's risk aversion, you don't want to be in a position where you are borrowing money offshore to fund your growth.
Seoul's new loan guarantees are meant to keep the credit flowing. It's a small step compared to what American and European regulators have done, but Korean banks stand healthier, as far as we know. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Asian markets saw big gains across the board. Shares in Europe remain higher this hour. So far, the Dow is up 149 points, 1.7% to 9,002. The Nasdaq is up 21 points, 1.2%. The S&P 500 up 16, 1.8%. Third quarter earnings statements and an appearance by Fed Chair Ben Bernanke in Washington will help keep things in perspective today. Two rival government agencies are reportedly teaming up to investigate trading in credit default swaps. At issue is whether traders manipulated this unregulated market as a way to basically drive down stock prices. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
Credit default swaps were created in the late 90s to be a kind of insurance. They cover the losses to bondholders when a bond goes into default. But even as the market ballooned to nearly $50 trillion, it went unregulated. The New York Times reports that New York State and federal prosecutors are now investigating whether traders manipulated the market to make a fast buck.
I think these post hoc criminalizations of activities that have been previously tolerated are counterproductive. It's all for the cameras.
That's money manager Michael Lewitt, editor of HCM Market Letter.
They don't accomplish anything in terms of creating reliable, consistent rules that people can count on.
Nevertheless, the Times reports that prosecutors are looking at whether traders manipulated these insurance policies that could weaken confidence in financial companies and send their stocks lower. The traders could then short the stock and make a killing. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Okay, credit default swaps are hard to get in a minute. We get that. That's why you should spend some time with Marketplace senior editor Patty Hirsch. Check out his very helpful video explanation at marketplace.org. You're listening to the Morning Report for Monday, October 20th on marketplace.org. There's been another major bank bailout in Europe, too. This time, taxpayers in the Netherlands are rescuing the giant Dutch ING Group. From the European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
The Dutch government is buying a $13 billion stake in ING and will take a couple of seats on the bank's supervisory board. Analysts are astounded. ING seemed squeaky clean, unpolluted with toxic assets. But on Friday, the bank's share price slumped by 27%. The bank then announced it had made its first ever quarterly loss. This is worrying, says fund manager Ewan Sterling, because the trouble stems from the bank's conventional investments like shares, bonds and property.
we're now seeing the economic impact of falling asset prices. And we, you know, we've seen the stock market falling quite precipitously this year so far. And it's the losses on traditional assets that seem to have hit ING.
The Dutch finance minister said ING is still healthy, but the bank needs the buffer of extra capital in these extraordinary times. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Congress is holding at least half a dozen hearings this week on how to regulate the banking industry. Members of Congress would rather be back home campaigning, but Steve Henn reports they also don't want to lose time in coming up with a plan for after the election.
Arthur Levitt, the former chairman of the SEC, is pretty blunt when discussing what led up to the current mess.
Our regulatory system failed to adapt to important, dynamic, and potentially lethal new financial instruments.
Levitt told the Senate Banking Committee last week the system is now broken.
We need a dramatic rethinking of our financial regulatory architecture, the biggest since the New Deal.
Mike Calhoun is president of the Center for Responsible Lending. He says job one is plugging the gaps in oversight.
Many of the worst subprime loans were sold by firms that operated under state charters and had very little supervision.
The industry knows more oversight is coming, especially in entirely unregulated areas like the multi-trillion-dollar market in credit default swaps. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
The last few months have been a tightrope act for banks. Many are reporting steep third-quarter losses. Bank of America reported its bleak results a few weeks ago. Maybe it should have waited. The government bank rescue plan may brighten its future. Marketplace's Janet Babin has that from North Carolina Public Radio.
With the financial crisis in full swing, Bank of America decided to announce its bad news early. Third quarter net income dropped by more than $2 billion from the year before. The company cut its dividend in half, and its stock price has taken a hit. But portfolio manager Anton Schutz at Burnham Financial Services says Bank of America is in better shape now than when it announced earnings in early October.
As much as we're in this insane market that swings around, you know, Bank of America is a much safer investment today, and obviously it's cheaper, so that combination of the two makes it something that, you know, I'm willing to own.
Schutz says the $25 billion government rescue plan gives the bank access to more capital at just 5% interest. Bank of America does still have to integrate the two purchases that might have ensured its survival. It bought investment bank Merrill Lynch last month and mortgage giant Countrywide earlier this year. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
CEO pay was a hot button issue in this month's bailout package. Many members of Congress said they wouldn't pass anything that didn't slap limits on the compensation that CEOs of rescued financial firms could expect. Rachel Dornhelm looked into whether this could take all executive compensation down a notch.
Right after crafting the historic bailout package, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi faced the press.
We sent a message to Wall Street. The party is over. The era of golden parachutes for high-flying Wall Street operators is over.
Wall Street salaries really took off in the early 80s, says Charles Elson. He's the director of the Corporate Governance Program at the University of Delaware. He says where the banks led, the bread-and-butter industries followed.
Investment bankers were drawing tremendous amounts of money. The CEOs of the companies who these bankers were servicing said, well, if I'm producing the goods, why should I not receive at least as much as those who are simply raising capital?
Back then, CEOs' salaries were 40 times larger than the average workers. Today, they are 600 times the size. Mark Borges is a compensation consultant. With numbers like that, he says there's little wonder CEO pay has become so hotly debated.
Because it's the one thing that I think we're all eminently qualified to understand and analyze. It's a real meat and potatoes issue.
Borges says it's still very early in the game, but the guidelines could affect CEO pay in all industries. Corporate governance professor Charles Elson says think of these rules like a pebble tossed into water.
Drop this stone in, and the reverberations of these kinds of limits go way beyond the institutions that are being regulated.
Defenders of high executive pay say companies have to offer large packages to attract great talent. But Elson says he expects company boards, which negotiate executive pay, will be forced to re-examine their hiring practices.
Boards fearful of governmental intervention, regulation, fearful of litigation, will begin to incorporate those kinds of limits or at least some restraints into the pay packages that they're negotiating.
Elson says Congress could take up the issue of broader CEO compensation regulation early next year. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Along with a world of bailouts, we're still trying to figure out how to characterize the U.S. Treasury's move to pour $125 billion into the 9 biggest banks in the country. Words like nationalization have been thrown around. Let's throw that out to Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. What do you make of it?
Well, I think no one has seen anything like this ever. So people are making up it as they go. And I hear that sometime next month there's a presidential vote in the United States. Is this true?
You know what? I think that's coming up here. Yeah.
Right. So with all of this, things have to be reduced to a soundbite. So it's nationalization, the end of capitalism as we know it. And just realizing that people are doing the best they can and have no idea what to do, that all disappears and everyone races to put a brand on it and then shriek.
And so what are you doing in this case? Is this the end of capitalism the way you look at it?
No, it's not even remotely the end of capitalism. If you look at the terms of the investment the government is making in these 9 banks, boy, I would kill for somebody to give me that much money and exert so little control over my life. I mean, if Paulson has got $100 billion looking for a home, I mean, I'm there.
But there are some that would say just the fact that it was Henry Paulson, that it was the government making this kind of deal with banks, is a step away from capitalism.
It's a step away from their definition of capitalism. I mean, you have a minimum wage law. That's a step away from capitalism. We have unemployment insurance. That's a step away from capitalism. We have bank deposit insurance. I don't hear any of the banks saying bank deposit insurance is socialistic, which it is. So the parts they like, they want to keep. But having the government come, give them money at 5%, which is incredibly cheap, have no strings on it, and that's nationalization. Well, that's nonsense.
And what do you say to all the people listening that are shaking their heads saying, yeah, but in the end, what's in this for me?
Well, I mean, I'm not a great fan of any of this. But I think what they're doing here is a lot better than the original plan, which I considered ridiculous, to go out and try to buy trashy securities from banks. What's in it for us is avoiding the risk of a worldwide financial collapse. And I really don't like some of these bigger institutions, which have really messed up bad, and now they're getting cheap money and having the nerve to whine about it. But show me an alternative.
Alan Sloan of Fortune Magazine, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Renita.
In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski.
American Public Media.